Hello, and welcome to the Global Film Podcast, a weekly discussion of all things cinema. I'm your host, Diego Andaluz, and today I'm happy to be joined by Manuel Salvento, editor-in-chief of MSP Reviews and writer for Echo Boomer, Murtada El Fadl, freelance culture critic and host of Sundays with Kate podcast.
Hi, Diego. Thank you so much for having me on your podcast. I'm excited to join today.
And Carolyn Hines, writer for The Observer, The Beat, and co-host of So Here's What Happened podcast.
Hi, everyone.
On today's episode, we are discussing Florian Zeller's The Father and Lee Daniels' The United States vs. Billie Holiday. Well, let's delve right into The Father. A man refuses all assistance from his daughter as he ages. As he tries to make sense of his changing circumstances, he begins to doubt his loved ones, his own mind, and even the fabric of his reality. So this one premiered at Sundance all the way back in January 2020 to much buzz, and it's currently in contention for a lot of awards this season. So what did you guys think about this one?
I really love this movie. I think it's a staggering achievement by Anthony Hopkins, the way that he plays this man who is losing his memory. You just can't take your eyes off him. He's very moving, and it's sometimes hard to watch him, but you feel so much for him. And at the end, I think it's that performance and also Olivia Colman's performance that sort of make this a real accomplishment.
Yeah, I agree with Murtada. I think The Father is an overwhelmingly devastating depiction of the painfully progressive disease that is dementia. I think Florian Zeller, extremely captivating storytelling, places the viewers inside the protagonist's mind, making the audience witness and feel everything through a perspective that is as unclear for Anthony Hopkins as it is for us. I really think it's a brilliant movie. It's one of my favorites of the last year, really.
Yeah, and I have to say, I agree. I first saw this one at AFI Fest, and it has not left my mind since. Once again, Anthony Hopkins' performance is honestly, in my opinion, the best of the year, and he truly does deserve all the awards, even though Chadwick Boseman is great as well. But I feel that the real highlight of this film is in both the writing and direction from Florian Zeller. I believe this is actually his first feature he's ever directed, but you can't tell that because he has such a masterful control over the camera, over the editing, over just the entire construction of this piece. And truly, this is one of those few films where it's so ambiguous, but it's not ambiguous just for the sake of being ambiguous. Like, it's ambiguous for a reason, again, to represent what's going on in Anthony Hopkins' brain. And there's been films, again, like I'm Thinking of Ending Things, like She Dies Tomorrow, things like that, that maybe have caused a little bit of controversy with how ambiguous they're being, or that even that they do end up tying up some loose ends. But this is maybe the only film this year that at the end of it, I'm not even quite sure what exactly is going on. And that's just a testament to how brilliant the writing and direction is, because it puts you right in the headspace of the main character. And again, from start to finish, you're not quite sure what's going on. You're left having to rewind or pause and see what's actually going on to comprehend things. And just the fact that it makes you think that way, and it's a testament to just how brilliant this film is. Because originally going in, I thought it looked maybe like your typical awards bait. Just Anthony Hopkins was a great performance, and that would be it. But again, just the way it was written, I did not expect that at all. And I was very, very pleasantly surprised by this one.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I think it's the way that it is composed, just like memory. I think you used the word ambiguous, but for me, it wasn't. It was very clear. But it just goes in and out the way that our memory sometimes goes in and out. You know, you're never sure of how you remember things. They're not in the same order. And that's where its brilliance comes from, in the way that he managed to construct memory out of these scenes that all take place, for the most part, in this one apartment. And so that's why I think this movie sings.
Yeah, I think that the fact that, you know, this is adapted from his own play that helped him a lot with the filmmaking adaptation, because, you know, you can see from the long takes that he really wants the actors to shine. And I think that Anthony Hopkins and Olivia Colman, but mainly Anthony Hopkins, really make this movie, because, you know, we have, you know, Hopkins delivered countless astonishing displays throughout his career, but this one might actually be one of my favorites. I've never anticipated that I'd shed so many tears by watching him cry, because I don't think it's a very common thing in his career, or at least I can't really remember another performance where he was so emotional. And I truly think that this is one of those stories that it will leave no one indifferent. You know, it's one of those stories that, because of the perspective that Zeller puts the viewer in, you're always getting, you feel the uncertainty growing and the doubt of what's truly happening. I mean, if you go in blind into this movie and you don't even know the synopsis, you almost think for the first 20 to 30 minutes that this is almost like a mystery thriller, you know, then that someone is trying to trick the old man. But it's not, it's really him. And this is actually, I have a kind of a personal connection to the movie, because even though my grandfather didn't have dementia, he wasn't quite there at the end. You know, he spent the last few months of his life just gradually not losing the grasp of reality. And he really spent the last days of his life just in a bed waiting for the day to come. And I noticed that evolution, that progressive pain that he felt. And it's really hard to watch this movie. And I needed a couple of days to really let it sink in.
Yeah, because I feel that there's definitely an angle where this could come off as exploitative. But I think the way it's handled, it's very respectful of the subject matter. And it doesn't play any of it just for the sake of being a gimmick.
And if we're talking about Anthony Hopkins, I think what I really enjoyed about his performance is how surprising it is. And you don't expect somebody who has such a long career as Anthony Hopkins to surprise you in his fifth, or is this his sixth decade of acting? And he's bringing in new shades. Like, I think if you look at his most well-known parts, you know, like Silence of the Lambs, or when he was really repressed in The Remains of the Day, or kind of an asshole in Howard's End, he's always played somebody who's reticent with his emotions, and this is such an emotional performance with him, especially as his character regresses and sort of becomes even childlike in some scenes. It is definitely a new shade from Anthony Hopkins, and I think I agree with Manuel. This is my favorite thing that he has ever done. It's just, what a brilliant performance from him. What an accomplishment.
Yeah, and picking up on what you said about the childish behavior that he displayed a couple of occasions, it's actually pretty realistic, because I also remember my grandfather. One day he could be just devastated, just down, not talk, not do anything, and then the next day is just incredible. He has such an energy, and I think, like Diego said as well, I think Zeller's story is very respectful of the disease, because this is not, you know, something that I don't consider this an easy watch for someone that deals with this in their family. I think this is going to be a hard watch for a lot of people, but at the same time, it could always work as a healing process, because, you know, you'll understand that you're not alone in this. You know, a lot of people go through this, and it's very difficult, not only for, you know, from the standpoint of Anthony Hopkins, who's dealing with the disease, but from everyone else. You can feel the frustration in everyone, because, you know, he talks about, and without not trying to get into spoilers, but we have the whole storyline of the second daughter, and you can feel the restraint in everyone in not telling what truly happened. And, you know, it's so hard to imagine, if you were in this position, what would you do? You know, I mean, it's such a hard thing to hang on to and not just explode and tell him, how can you not remember this, you know? And I think that the movie is very, very powerful in that regard.
One of the things that really adds to it is that this film could have very easily been presented through Olivia Colman's eyes or someone else who isn't the central character. But by presenting it through Hopkins' eyes, that's actually what I think makes the film so compelling and engaging. Because when you get that first-person perspective of dementia or whatever he's going through, it really hits home. Because, again, I've also had family members who's dealt with this. And I think that it's actually kind of like a horror movie, because you feel that frustration, you feel that anger, you feel that sadness, you feel that kind of position where you're without any power, whether it's him or whether you're one of the family members of someone who has been in this situation. And I feel like at some point in all of our lives, we will either be knowing someone who is going through this or ourselves being the ones that are going through this. And I think that just makes it just a tad bit just more like a sadder and more compelling, because we've all experienced this or will experience this at some point in our lives. And just being able to look through the eyes of someone who is currently experiencing it just really hit home for me.
And I also want to talk a little bit about Olivia Colman. Like, I think the movie derives a lot of its strengths from just the way that she deals with this situation. Anthony Hopkins is amazing, but she matches him because in her eyes and in her face, you sort of see how much he's deteriorating, how much what is happening to him is affecting her. So she is the audience stand-in, which is not an easy sort of thing to do. But every time, you know, they cut to her, you feel sort of the enormity of this situation in her face. And I think she's an actor whose face telegraphs emotion so easily. So I think she was the perfect person to play this part. And, you know, she plays, I don't know if we mentioned it, but she plays his daughter who's trying to take care of him as he's losing his memory and descending into dementia.
Yeah, I actually think Olivia Colman even elevates Anthony Hopkins' performance, because without her, you don't have that counterpart that really shows what's truly happening, you know. And not trying to delve too much into the technical process of the movie, because I truly think this is a lot of the movie's success is due to Zeller storytelling. But Ludovico Einaudi's score is actually pretty, I think it's still the spotlight in the technical realm, just because, you know, you go from the atmospheric grand opera music to the more subtle tracks. But Einaudi really makes sure to elevate those critical moments when something really big happens inside the Hopkins, you know, perception of reality. And there's like a noticeable sound that helps the viewer understand how important that shift in Anthony's perception is.
Yeah, I mean, it's so powerful. And I think from now on, I do want to actually go in a little bit into spoiler territory. So this is a spoiler warning for everyone listening. Down below in the description, you'll be able to see the time code where we skip to the next film if you want to skip the spoiler talk for now and come back later. But I also want to hear what you guys think in terms of interpretations of that ending. Because, again, what do you guys think is actually happening? And, again, do you think it actually matters to the plot? Because while I don't think it actually matters to what the film is trying to say, I am curious to hear what you guys think was really happening throughout the entire film. Like, was he the whole time in a home? Was he just living free and then at the end he got home? Who was actually his daughter? Because there's a lot of questions there to be asked that can help piece the film together.
I agree with you. I don't think it matters. To me, the way that I saw it is that everything is fragments of his memories. So he probably at one point lived with his daughter and he ended up in that home. So the movie actually follows his story chronologically. He started by living alone, perhaps, and then moved in with his daughter. And then she might have went to Paris or not. And then he ended up at the home. And so that's how I took it, that it was a chronological thing, but because his memory is fragmented and he keeps losing it, that's why it was presented to us that way. And yeah, I think if we're looking into spoilers, I think Olivia Colman is definitely his daughter, and the other actress, I think her name is Olivia Williams, is the caretaker at the facility that he ends up in.
Yeah, I agree with Murtada. I think I don't think it really matters. You know, if someone tries to just make logic out of everything and try to like do a detailed chronology of what happened and how it happened, I don't think it's really fair, because it's not even the goal of the movie. I think the goal of the movie is to just depict dementia as it is, because it's a pretty realistic movie. And, you know, I think Murtada was right when he said that we're watching fragments of his memory. So, you know, I think every conversation that he had truly happened. I just think that where it happened and with who it happened, I think that's the thing that keeps the movie going, because we keep going back to that day of having chicken for dinner, she coming back from the store, she mistakes, you know, the people at the nursing home with their own daughter and husband or boyfriend. And, you know, that those fragments are what keep the movie interesting as well, because we're following the story through a Hopkins perspective, but also, you know, intertwining with the real perspective, at least from what I believe, because the beginning of the movie, we have Hopkins just talking with Olivia Williams and I don't know the name of the other actor, but she's talking with the two persons that supposedly work at the nursing home, and is not like, he doesn't understand who they are because he's expecting their daughter. And I think that by the end, or I don't know if it's a middle movie, we see that same scene play out, but through Olivia Colman's perspective, and we understand, and okay, now we start to get what truly happened. I think it's a bit confusing at times, but I think by the end, you don't finish the movie and be like, oh, well, now I want to see it again to make, you know, logic of everything that I saw. No, you're really trying to even deal with what you just saw, because it's not a light film.
Yeah, exactly. What I think is going on is that this whole time he's in his nursing home, as you guys actually said, and he's just reminiscing on some of his old memories, some of his most important events in his latter part of his life that kind of led him down that route, especially considering the constricted atmosphere. And that's also another thing that I wanted to bring up here, is the fact that there have been films in the past year that are based on plays, such as One in Miami and Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. And I feel that it's very apparent that they were based on plays, and you can really feel how constricted the set is and how like limited the atmosphere is because of its trappings of being a play. But I think that this adaption, Zeller here, is able to transcend the trappings of it being adapted from a play, because I honestly didn't know it was a play at all until the very end when I was reading up about the film, because it works so well for the story that they're supposed to be constricted. It works so well. It's in line with the themes as well, because like One in Miami, Ma Rainey's Black Bottom is a little bit more about like liberation, a little bit of a wider scope. And I feel that it could have benefited definitely from maybe some like more movement around in the scenes, a little bit more here and there. But for this one, I think the whole part of limitation and of constriction, and it helps heighten the confusion. And for that, I think that it works perfectly for this. And as well for the film, again, I think that it maybe takes all place in his mind and he's just in his old folks' home. But as you were saying, like, films like this, like, for instance, I'm Thinking of Ending Things. That was one where the instant it ended, I wanted to go right back and rewatch it to kind of see the missing puzzle pieces here and there and kind of piece it together in my mind. But here, I was just left so emotionally shattered that I had to think about it for days. And again, it's just, I've watched it twice since it premiered at AFI, but it's there's been a lot of space in between it because it's just so emotionally devastating. I'd say one of the most emotionally devastating films of the year. And I truly hope, because this is actually going to be released this weekend in theaters, and it's getting, I think, the kind of wider and wider releases in the next couple of weeks. So definitely catch this one when it's out, because it's emotionally devastating, and it's one of my favorites of the year.
Yeah, I think to what you were just saying, I do hope that it reaches an audience, because I think it needs to be seen, and I think the performances particularly need to be seen, and the way that it's done. I mean, what you were talking about, or how you didn't think it was a play, it does, even though it mostly takes place in a couple of rooms, the way that it is composed, the way that it's composed as if you're going from one room in your memory to another, from one room in Anthony Hopkins' memory to another, it's very well done and cinematic, and I think people will enjoy it.
Yeah, I think The Father is a devastating depiction of dementia. I think Florian Zeller and Christopher Hampton's screenplay, I think it's brilliantly unique, packed with emotional punches that will leave no one indifferent, from the perfect editing to the lingering camera work to Ludovico Einaudi's score. I mean, you can, even technical, the movie has plenty to appreciate, but I truly think it's Zeller's direction here, and the fact that, you know, he's adapting his own play, that really elevates the movie, because, you know, the use of long takes feel both necessary and important to attach the viewer's attention to Anthony Hopkins, who delivers an award-worthy performance, probably one of my favorites of his career. And I truly think that regarding this award season, only Chadwick Boseman can really beat him in a few ceremonies, because out of everyone that I've heard so far, he has no competition whatsoever. So, you know, hopefully this will be the closest I'll ever be to experience this metal condition, because it's so realistic, it's so vivid that it really feels like you're feeling the pain and every emotion and thought that goes through Anthony's mind. So yeah, I mean, it's my, you know, my personal connection to this film probably makes it a lot better than maybe for some viewers that might watch this in the few weeks, in the next weeks. And it's my first maximum rating since 2019. So it's definitely one of the best movies I've seen in the last couple of years. And yeah, I advise people to not miss it.
Yeah, honestly, for me as well, it's top 10 of, I'd say, both 2021 and 2020, depending on how you view this film. For me, definitely one that you cannot miss. I feel that Hopkins maybe just delivered his career best performance, and that is pretty high acclaim, as he's had some incredible performances in the past. Olivia Colman is great as well, but Zeller, again, he just imbues his story with a sense of ambiguity that results in such an impactful and innovative narrative that will not be forgotten, while he's able to still like sensitively and accurately portray the rising anxieties that we're all have felt or are going to feel at some point in life. So now let's move on to The United States versus Billie Holiday, which tells a story of how the Federal Bureau of Narcotics launches an undercover sting operation against jazz singer Billie Holiday. So this one actually was going to be handled by Paramount for an awards, early award season release. And then with the COVID pandemic and all these uncertainties, it actually got moved to Hulu, which is giving it a release just in time to qualify for a bunch of awards this weekend. So Carolyn, what did you think about this one?
I like the film. So I have two opinions on the film, because when I first watched it, I liked it. It's not perfect. I do have some issues with it technically and story-wise. And I liked it. And I like the performances, but then I read Billie Holiday's memoir. And after reading that memoir and then rewatching the film again, I'm like, yeah, this film is problematic. But my overall thing is Andra Day is the best part of that film. Casting her was a stroke of genius on their part. And it does showcase her talents not only as a singer, but also as an actress. And I think she did a phenomenal job doing this for the first time acting ever. So I think she did a fantastic job. The film itself has like some amazing costume design here. The department did what they had to do. As I said, like the supporting cast did a really good job. But overall, I do have issues with the film. It's complicated. I called it, in my review, I said it's harsh, and it doesn't really give us enough of Billie Holiday herself as an individual, because it focuses a lot on abuse that she suffered from at the hands of men. And also, it does talk about how the Federal Bureau of Narcotics basically targeted and harassed her for years and used her as a scapegoat for their war on drugs. And it does touch on that, but it doesn't really give us Billie Holiday apart from specific situations.
Yeah, I agree with you, Carolyn. Like, I think because Lee Daniels and Susan Laurie Parks, who adapted a book for what they decided to center the story on is the story of the FBI trying to frame Billie Holiday, which means that we get to spend a lot of time with Trevante Rhodes, who plays an undercover FBI agent who then becomes Billie's lover, and instead of spending time with Andra Day as Billie Holiday. So it's a little bit lopsided that way. And, you know, as somebody who I actually think Lee Daniels is an amazing auteur with a very particular stamp. Like, you can't see anything that he has done and not know that it's a Lee Daniels movie, which is the definition of auteur. But he sort of thrives in chaos. And when he does his best work, is very chaotic. But I think here it just sort of it slipped from him a little bit. I wish he had found a rhythm to the chaos that he was trying to do. The movie's rhythm is very haphazard, that sometimes it's very hard to follow the story.
Yeah, I didn't get into this movie with high expectations. I didn't know much about the story. I didn't know anything about Billie Holiday, really. So, but I still think that The United States versus Billie Holiday could have been an inspirational, impactful story about Billie Holiday's influence not only in jazz music, but mainly in the fight for equal civil rights, because I actually did some research before the movie so that I didn't go in completely blind. But I actually agree with a bit of both of you. I think the performance is, I think Andrew Day is amazing. But I think Lee Daniels' inconsistent direction and Susan Laurie Park's messy screenplay, I think, you know, there are two of some issues that make this film a bit of a letdown. If people really had high expectations, I think it could be a letdown for a lot of people. I didn't have high expectations, so I can truly say it's disappointing. But yeah, I expected a bit more, especially since these kinds of movies, I'm actually quite lenient. I just really want to know about the story of the protagonist. And like Murtada said, I think they focus too much on stuff that's not about Billie Holiday or not really a direct story about her, you know?
Yeah, for me, one of my biggest issues with the film is how it focuses a lot on the male characters. Like you mentioned, Trevante Rose, who plays the FBI agent who was tasked with infiltrating Billie Holiday's life and forming a relationship with her. And in the film, it's clearly is defined as a sexual relationship, and that he took drugs or whatever to endear himself to her. But reading interviews with the and news articles about that, it seemed like there was never any proof that he actually did take drugs and that their relationship actually became as physical and as involved as the film portrays. And I think the writer, Susan Laurie Parks, I was surprised that as a Black woman that she would actually center so much of her story around Trevante Rose and the other men in Billie's life. I'm like, this is supposed to be about Billie Holiday. Everything that we're getting with her is centered around the men in her life. Like, we don't really get any scenes with her thinking about herself, about her career, about her singing, about her music, about her relationships with people outside of these men. Like, for instance, another thing that bothered me is her mother. There's one scene that we get with the mother, and it's in play that her mother was dismissive of Billie and that she didn't really care for Billie, which is not the truth. When you read Billie's memoir, you can tell that Billie herself says that her mother was very loving and her mother was very caring and loved her. And I think it was wrong to do that, to not only to Billie's memory, but also to the memory of her mother.
This film was one that I thought it was all right. There's been a couple of hyperbolic takes out there that I would not agree with. Like, I definitely think it's competent, but I think it actually would have been quite a solid Best Picture winner if it was released maybe a decade or two ago. It definitely has the makings of a wannabe Oscar contender, just like Oscar bait. However, there are some pretty good and pretty bad traits to it. First off, Lee Daniels' direction and the editing as well. It's very, I'd say, messy and unfocused, like especially in terms of the transitions and how they go from one scene to another. Sometimes they use these very cheap effects, just like trying to make it old-timey film grain, sometimes with crossfades. And it feels so out of place in a film like this one. And it's honestly a little bit distracting, and it does cheapen the value of the film just a little bit. But Andra Day's performance is magnificent. One of the best of the year for sure. For a first performance, it was incredible. And I cannot wait to see kind of how her career evolves. Hopefully she stays in the acting realm. Because from what I understand, she's a pretty successful singer, but I'd love to see her acting in more and more films because she definitely has the talent necessary to make it big and become one of our generation's best actors. But again, Lee Daniels' direction and the screenplay, the editing especially, were a little bit of a letdown and did cheapen the value of the film. It has its pacing issues, and I can definitely see those problematic angles that you presented, Carolyn. But I feel it's just competent filmmaking, which at the end of this award season is really dragging a lot of people down. A lot of people are very disappointed. I personally thought that this could have been a real contender before, obviously, people started seeing it. But yeah, again, it's a little bit disappointed, but it's just competent filmmaking and nothing more.
I just want to say something about Andra Day. I think this is a fantastic debut. This is one of those instances when a first-time actor sort of finds a role that fits them just like a glove and then immediately becomes a star, I think was the promise of years of spellbinding performances to come. She is magnificent. And if I definitely, if I had a vote, you know, and I definitely voted for her in my critics group, if I had a vote, I think she is better than most of the front runners in Best Actress for the Oscar right now, in my opinion. I think she's just staggering performance. She's so amazing. She holds the screen. She changed her voice in the singing scenes. She lowered her register to get that gravelly voice of Billie Holiday. She moves so well, and there are so many scenes where she gives, where the camera just follows her as she's walking around. It's a full body performance. It's just, it's amazing. I think if the film was better, I think she would have won Best Actress.
Yeah, I think that's actually, you know, in an ideal world, you know, people would just value the performance and forget about the movie. But, you know, we all know that if the movie doesn't, you know, if the movie is really divisive as this one has been, I doubt that she's going to win. I'm not going to say that she's not going to win any ceremony, but, you know, in Globe and Globes, or if she gets nominated for the Oscars, which I doubt, but you never know. I doubt that she's going to win. But, I mean, I agree with all of you. I think if not for her, this could have been a major disaster, because she's really, really, really surprised me. I never expected, you know, a debut from a singer that I actually appreciate, but I never expected a debut like this to be so powerful and so captivating, because it's really her that got me through the whole movie. And picking up on a lot of things that you guys said, you know, Diego talked about the transitions, and I really thought that, you know, there were a lot of awkward, swift transitions to black and white and then back to color. You know, I think there's a bit of lack of connection between cuts and even storylines, and it's a bit hard to follow or actually be captivated by such a visually confusing film. I also think that the screenplay enters, I don't know if I'm being too rigorous maybe, but at points, I do think that the screenplay enters some sort of monotonous, repetitive cycle of, you know, they depict Billie Holiday heavily smoking and taking drugs. Then she goes and sings a full song, and then she has sex with a man. And that this cycle of events happens like 3 or 4 times during the movie. And it's a bit weird because, you know, on one hand, you see Billie Holiday and she's a strong, proud black woman who's trying to fight for what's right through her voice, but, you know, through an astonishing tenacity. But then on the other hand, you know, the viewers have to endure numerous sequences of, you know, behavior that you don't really hope to see from someone that you're trying to root for or connect with. And at least from my point of view, I had a little bit of trouble in connecting with Billie Holiday, or feeling, you know, that I should support her in a few moments. But yeah, I think Andrew Tate really elevates the character. I think there's, you know, neat production design. The score is quite engaging. The music is amazing. And I actually think that the only moment, the only aspect of the movie that I really, like, almost want to applaud is the build-up to the Strange Fruit performance. Because, you know, it's one of those things that throughout the movie, it starts as someone just talking about it and how controversial it is. Then it progresses to Billy singing the first verse and then getting... I'm sorry, I'm getting into spoiler territory, no? I don't want to get into spoilers too much. But, you know, it gets into an evolution of, you know, she's not singing it and she sings it just a little bit, and then we have that final performance of a song that I didn't know the lyrics to, and it really builds up to that moment really, 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 really good. And I think her performance of the song is amazing. I think that's the highest point of the movie. And, you know, it's at the beginning of the third act, and I think from then that point on, we never reach that moment again. It's really the best moment of the movie. And yeah, I mean, otherwise, it's a really hard movie to watch, in my opinion.
For me, it was hard for me to watch. I've seen the film a couple times. As I said, I saw it before because I had to do my review, but also I wanted to watch it again after reading her memoir while I was writing my review. And the scenes with abuse, like as you mentioned, her doing the drugs and then singing and then coming back, and then there's like this physical abuse. And that was also, I thought that was pretty repetitive from a story point of view, but also just from a film perspective, but also like those scenes of her suffering physical abuse were very hard for me to watch, because I'm like, how much of screen time is taken up watching this black woman be abused? And I'm like, And then I was thinking, this is Andrew Day's first role. And imagine your very, very first role playing an iconic Black female singer, one who inspired you, having, and then the majority of your screen time is spent being as a character being beaten up all the time. And I'm like, this is hard for me to watch on various perspectives. And I just felt like it didn't serve Billie Holiday well, because when you read her memoir and you see, yes, she did suffer physical abuse from her partners in her life, but that wasn't all her life. And even for the drug abuse, like the film focuses a lot on the drug, on her struggle with drug addiction. And she did struggle with that, but there were peers in her life where she was sober for like a year or 2 years at a stretch. And we don't see her having those moments of triumph in the film. As you mentioned, the only real moment of triumph we get is her when she's singing Strange Fruit. And that song also was a song that was actually physically difficult for Billie to sing because of the emotional toll it took on her. Like she said that she would get physically sick after every performance because of what the song represented and what it meant for her personally because of what happened to her father. And we don't see that. We don't see the emotional struggle connected to that song, which I think would have been important to show, because that really does talk about the struggles of being Black in America at that time, and the progression of the civil rights movement, because Billie Holiday was one of the first Black performers to use their platform to speak about the injustices that Black people were suffering at the hands of not only the police, but also the public as well, because she was one of the people, they referred her sometimes as the godmother of the civil rights movement. And we don't really get anything about that in the film. And I thought that was also a weakness in the film as well. And there are some events that they turn around and make her look more like the bad person than what actually happened in reality. So that was one of the most disappointing things about the film. It's funny that I liked it at first when I watched it, but then as I thought more about it, I'm like, this film has so much issues.
I mean, I agree with Caroline that what we don't get in this movie is what Billie Holiday meant to Black people at that time. Like the period in that this film takes place in is the late 40s and the 50s. And she meant so much. There is one scene at the very beginning, and sorry, this is a little bit of a spoiler, but it's literally the opening scene where two fans go backstage at Cafe Society who are on a visit from Baltimore. And they sort of talk to Billie Holiday, and in that conversation, you can see that they are showing her what she means to them and what her songs mean to them. And I was so happy when I saw that scene, and I'm like, oh, this is a movie that's going to be about what Billie Holiday means to Black people at that time. And then that was it, and we never saw that again. And I wish that there was more of that, because to what Caroline was saying, she was an icon at that time, and a lot of people took their cues from her in the civil rights struggle.
Yeah, I mean, it's actually quite enlightening to me listening to you guys talk about it, because, you know, I'm not the target audience for the film. I didn't know anything about it, but I was kind of, you know, I knew that this could have been something really great and that there was something missing. I noticed that in the filmmaking and in the storytelling, and now listening to you guys, I can now understand, you know, the gaps that the movie has, that if they would fill out, they would be, it would have been maybe a best picture contender. You never know. But, you know, I think that even technically the movie, you know, as you know, the editing, I think it's a bit jumbled, but, you know, I think that it was Murtada that said that Lee Daniels' direction is a lot based on chaos. And I think that, you know, in a lot of movies that could work, I don't think it quite works in this movie. Like he said, I think it's a bit erratic. But you can see, you know, in tiny moments of the movie, you can actually see, okay, this really could have been great. Why can't they just pick this, you know, this scene and just replicate it for the rest of the film? And, you know, it's a bit... you know, even though, like I said, I didn't have high expectations because I couldn't make expectations for the film, it still feels a bit like a letdown, just because you can see during the movie the potential that it has, and it never quite reaches, except for the Strange Fruit performance, like I said. And, you know, Andrew Day is in a movie that doesn't really help her or doesn't really reach her level. I think that's the best way of describing it. I think Caroline really touched on a good point by saying that, you know, because she read the memoir, like I said, so there's a lot of historical accuracy, maybe concepts or events that didn't really, that for people who know might, you know, frustrate a few people, maybe, I don't know. But I think that overall, I think people just go in expecting to see a movie about Billie Holiday, and they don't quite get that.
Yeah, and one thing that I forgot to mention, but I think that, as you were saying, is another aspect that just shows so much potential, is the production design and the costume design. Because the thing is, the editing, as I was saying before, it cheapens the value of the whole film. But the film's production value itself, down to the costume design, the hair and makeup, the production design especially, it's just absolutely stunning. It does feel like great. Like, again, the production design, I don't think it's going to get nominated for anything, but if it does, I would have no complaints. The costumes were stellar, and they really did aid in kind of transporting you to that period. Now, if only Lee Daniels was able to successfully kind of hold that atmosphere and make it come through the actual script. But the production design, the costume designs were amazing as well, and really brought it kind of full circle as kind of a period piece. Again, this is one of those films that it seems like it had all the makings of a truly great film. I think this actually, it plays a little bit like a first draft of a script. I think it, maybe there was a couple of more passes given to the script, a little bit more contextualization. It could have been a great film and a great top-tier contender, but unfortunately, I think Lee Daniels once again, and the film just ended up being competent, but nothing more and nothing special.
And I guess the final thing I'll just say is, and that you said before, but I think it's just like worth mentioning, because we've had some really fantastic films about this era in Black African-American history. We had one in Miami. We've had MLK FBI Vest, the documentary by Sam Pollard. And we have Judas and the Black Messiah, which takes place later in the 70s. And then we have this film, United States versus Billie Holiday. And I think it's really important that we're having these kind of films talking about how Black people in particular were being persecuted by the government. Because usually we have a lot of films centered around like the civil rights era and racism in America in the 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s going down. It's usually taken from the perspective of civilians, but you know more stories between Black people and Black and white civilians. I think it's important that we're getting films to see how systemic racism began from before, and began in the 40s and even earlier. And I think this film does have an important message, because it does show how Black women like Billie Holiday were targeted, because they targeted other musicians in that time as well. So it's important to show that Black women were also like persecuted and harassed by the federal government as well. But it has such potential as a film in general, and it's kind of sad to see that it does have these particular flaws. And I'm so happy for Andra Day that she's getting all of these accolades for her performance, because I think she was stunning. Like, her vocalization and her singing and her performance is amazing. But I just think that it's kind of sad that the film itself kind of lets down Andra and lets down Billie this way. But I would still recommend people to watch it, because it's important to see these kind of stories. But then I would also recommend it to do research and read her memoir and other stories about her. And hopefully we maybe will get another film later on down the road that does a bit, that does better with regards to giving more historical accuracy and giving us more details about Billie's life.
Well, that concludes this week's episode of the Global Film Podcast. Where can we find everyone on social media? Carolyn?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at CarrieCNH1. That's CarrieCNH12. You can find links to my writing, to my podcast, which is hosted on butwhythepodcast.com. I have three. I have So Here's What Happened, Carolyn Talks, and Beyond the Room. That's my K-drama podcast. And I'm always on Twitter talking about films, TV shows, and just things and politics and things in general. And I think that's it. I have to mention I'm a part of the African American Film Critics Association, and we've been doing virtual roundtables with Black creators in the film, television, and art industries, and we've been having amazing chats with people like Daniel Kaluuya, Andrew Dave for Billie Holiday. We've talked to Tiana Paris about WandaVision, sadly did not get to take part in that one. And our senior hall at Eddie Murphy for Coming to America 2. It's been fun, and you can go on the YouTube channels on the after site.
Nice, Murtada.
Yes, you can find me on Twitter at @ME_says, and my podcast is Sundays with Kate with a C, and you can find the podcast at sundayswithkate.com or follow Sundays with Kate, all one word, on Twitter and Instagram. And my latest piece that just dropped yesterday is that I profiled Darius Marder, the director of Sound of Metal, for Backstage magazine, and you can find that at backstage.com.
And Manuel?
Yeah, you can follow me on all social media at MSP Reviews. You can follow my blog at mspreviews.com. And if you know how to read Portuguese, you can follow me at ecoboomer.pt.
Nice. So you can follow me personally at The Diego Andaluz, and that's Andaluz on both Twitter and Letterboxd, as well as the podcast at Global Film Pod on Twitter. Thank you everyone for coming on board. Thank you all for listening, and make sure to rate, subscribe, and follow us to be notified when the next episode comes out.